Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Sue Fraser, representing the Press Club Committee. Would you please welcome the President of the South Australian Press Club, Don Riddell. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sue. Welcome again. I'm just here to tell you what goes on this afternoon, if you're new. And at 1 o'clock, I introduce our speaker. He speaks for half an hour, 35 minutes, 40 minutes. It's getting more expensive. Or whatever. And then after that, there are questions from the media till 2 o'clock. If the media run out, then the general public may ask questions, but our guest doesn't have to answer them. So I look forward to seeing you again at 1 o'clock. In the meantime, Sue's got some more things to say. Thank you.
Thank you, John. On behalf of the Press Club Committee, I wish to acknowledge Telstra. I know they're here today, and Telstra is our corporate supporter of the Press Club. We thank the representatives for their ongoing support. Our wine sponsors are Orlando Wyndham, and for your enjoyment today, we're serving Jacobs Creek Reserve Chardonnay 2000, Jacobs Creek Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon 1998. Thank you to Robbie Cooter at SA Brewing for the Hahn Premium and Hahn Premium Light. And if you're not on our mailing list and you'd like to be for further luncheons, would you please talk to Alison out at the front desk and give her your business card. Now to our raffle. Tickets are $2 or 3 for $5. And you could win today. We have, thanks to Telstra, a Panasonic cordless phone. I'm sure you'd like that. From Walter Rogers. Dear Walter, where are you, Walter? Are you here? There he is. A $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Googie Street for some great seafood. And a $50 voucher from Rigoni's Bistro in Lee Street, legendary for its fine Italian food. And we have a family pass of 4 tickets to a special movie preview next Tuesday night of the new movie America's Sweethearts. So 4 of you can go. It stars Julia Roberts, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Billy Crystal and John Cusack. And I have actually seen a sneak preview and you'll enjoy it. Australia's celebrity chefs have produced a highly artistic and unique 2002 calendar. 12 media chefs reveal a fantasy image. They've been body painted to match their favourite recipe. It's $24.99 from Angus and Robinson. All proceeds go to the Variety Club, and I brought a copy with me today for the raffle. A carton of Hahn Premium Light from SA Brewing. So that's what's in the raffle today. So buy up, and we'll be back soon. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. I don't know about you, but I miss it terribly. First, the sardonic eye. Then the quietly opening lips, good evening. And you tense up, wondering who of your mates is in for it. Which nasty bit of plagiarism? Which slithy bit of editing? What has the editor of the Illawarra Mercury done now, for heaven's sake? And what of... That's right. And what of pompous opinions to be deflated? What of the great men of talkback? What of media barons and libel laws? What of the parrot? Today's guest is both one of us and one remarkably different. He was once an investigative reporter on television. He's now a Queen's Counsel, the dish rag to the silk. To speak, I think, on the theme, why I want to be managing director of the ABC and why I won't get the job, please welcome Stuart Littlemore.
Thank you, Don, and thank you for having me back. Most people never ask me back. The title, to be precise, of this afternoon's lecture is Why I Want Jonathan Shire's Job and Why I Won't Get It. I should begin, I suppose, by telling you why I think Jonathan Shire isn't up to the job of Chief Executive of the ABC. And the first reason is that he doesn't love the idea of the ABC. The second is that he doesn't understand the idea of the ABC. This is, after all, the managing director who was angry that the ABC missed out on the rights to make the Australian version of The Weakest Link. This is, after all, the man who explained disappointing television ratings by telling us that the ABC audience had been watching Big Brother on Channel 10. I assume he was serious. I conclude from those two attitudes that Mr. Shire would be relaxed and comfortable with an ABC that included those programs in its schedule. He must believe they fit an ABC audience. I don't. And the third reason I think Mr. Shire isn't up to the job is that he's been managing director now for 18 months and the product stinks. Look at the schedule. Second-rate English product, no doubt bought very cheaply. Dominating prime time. The Sleeper. The Bill. The Bloody Bill. The Russian Bride. The Savages. Teachers. Nigella Lawson. And the Soul, cut out of any Australian program that could be described as challenging. We now have The Glass House. Have you seen that? The Fat. And Australian Story, more accurately named Weekend Magazine, under another name, and reruns of Sea Change and 1915, whose production values are so bad that the print is unwatchable. Now, Shire, I read, was hired as an agent of change. Perhaps that ought to be expressed as an agent of the Thatcherite forces that dominate current government philosophy, if that's not too flattering a word, philosophy, and hence the board of the ABC. On the one hand, Shire has presided over reckless adventurism every bit as ill-considered as David Hills. You may remember the Asian Satellite Service and the Fairfax joint venture. And Brian Johns. He wanted to sell the ABC's content to Telstra. And Shire vetoed that, but only because the price wasn't high enough. I admit to being implacably opposed to diverting program funds to online services. That is not the ABC's charter. If the government wants an online ABC, it can legislate for it and fund it. There's every reason to believe that the emphasis on parallel paths is intended to take the ABC into what are imagined to be revenue-generating activities so that the government can wash its hands of the place. That won't work, of course, and least of all will the online adventure work. The real point is that online the ABC may generate advertising revenue. In terms of its legislation, on air, it may not. On the other hand, Shire's been responsible for what I regard as the worst period in the corporation's history, judged by its significance to the Australian community. I was an Argonaut. Senator Alston wasn't. That says a lot about our different attitudes to the ABC. Only the old ones in the room will understand what I'm talking about. We Argonauts always thought it was our ABC. The government has always thought it was someone else's ABC, and the sooner it silences them and it, the better. It is a poor thing, the ABC, but it is our own. I first worked there almost 40 years ago when I started in Sydney Radio News as a first-year cadet journalist. In those days, the ABC's chief executive was Charlie Moses, and the place was an amiable, bumbling, mostly good-natured old boys' club, with the emphasis on boy. Women were secretaries and tea ladies. Television wasn't even 10 years old, and nobody had really come to terms with it. Moses was more interested in the wood-chopping competitions at the Royal Easter Show in Sydney, and he probably believed that TV was a 9-day wonder, but the Village Glee Club would go on forever. I lasted out my cadetship, mainly in TV news, and resigned to go off and try my luck in England with the BBC. My next stint at the ABC was 3 years later. By now, Talbot Duckmanton had taken over as chief executive, and the place was not so amiable, but just as incompetent. The internecine differences had become quite vicious, and largely because the ABC had discovered quotidian television current affairs. This Day Tonight had started, and was causing a great deal of trouble to those Bob Ellis famously described as the claret-pickled pontiffs at head office, Actually, I tried pickling a pontiff in claret once, and it can't be done. But that's true of a lot of Bob's more memorable aphorisms. Duckmanton was more interested in legacy in the Methodist Church. His technique was to absent himself for long periods, attending Asian broadcasting conferences, at which he said not a word, but just puffed on his pipe. Incidentally, Duckmanton is best remembered for touring the Tasmanian branch, where the lift driver insisted on calling him Mr. Manton. And after a few days of this, Talbot said to the man, "Look, it's Duckmanton. Please call me Duckmanton." "Oh, no, sir," said the lift driver, "I don't know you well enough." Actually, I have to admit there is a lot of romantic nonsense talked about the golden days of this day tonight. Clive Hale's raised eyebrow, vacant chairs to signify federal ministers who declined to appear, red-faced outrage in the ABC board at all those young puppies and bomb throwers. But they were wonderful days for those of us who were making and throwing the bombs. We had Vietnam and conscription and White Australia and Bolte and Askin and Bjelke Petersen and all sorts of soft, easy targets. You couldn't miss John Gorton, Billy McMahon, Don Dunstan, Steel Hall. Fortunately, we didn't take ourselves too seriously, well, not all the time. Some did. Jerry Stone was a notable exception, but he went on to shine as Murdoch's current affairs guru in New York, where his program's style was foot-in-the-door intrusions into serial killers' homes and close-up examination of their victims' body parts. Still, we got our revenge. We sent them Steve Dunleavy and Piers Ackerman. And because of TDT, the ABC assumed a new importance in the daily lives of many Australians. All that old comfortable stuff of the Sunday night news and weekend magazine withered away in the face of the aggression of new journalism, which wasn't only going on in the ABC. Print journalists all wanted to be like Philip Knightley in the Sunday Times Insight team. They weren't journalists anymore. You couldn't find a journalist. All you ever met were investigative journalists. We had our investigations, some of them remarkably effective. I can recall exposés of building societies and municipal councils causing all sorts of bother. But more importantly, we had a remarkable range of skills and abilities available to TDT. We had people who could make films, write scripts, interview, mediate debates, perform live, sing, play musical instruments, review everything from an opera to a new car. We even had people with a sense of humour who could write and direct review-style sketches. Compare that with the 7:30 report. The programs produced and performed by those people had immense appeal to the ABC's audience, which did develop a phenomenal loyalty to the show. And the names are still with us. Bob Connolly, who now makes documentaries that win every international prize on offer. There's a new one out now called Facing the Music that I recommend to you. Caroline Jones, Peter Luck of Adelaide, Paul Murphy, Peter Couchman, Kerry O'Brien was there, Mike Carlton, even Richard Carlton. Tony Joyce gave his life for the program. And that's not to mention the directors and producers like David Salter, who worked with me on TDT, Media Watch, and a program called Little More, producers and directors whose names are not so well known as the on-air people. This Day Tonight, like Tony Joyce, took risks. It was assertive, overconfident, troublesome, embarrassing, disquieting, irreverent, frequently wrong, but always watchable. And it had the protection of the managers who bore responsibility for it. There is no such program on the ABC now. While there is some fine work being done on Radio National, and very important work, that is not the mainstream of ABC production, and it is not television. I lasted about 4 years at TDT, off and on, more off than on, and it was a further 15 years before I returned to the ABC, this time to write and present Media Watch, which I did for 9 years. And by then, the chief executive was David Hill, and the place was a corporation that reflected his personality, edgy, assertive, self-confident, interventionist, but still a brawling journalist at heart. Yet there was still too much tinkering and fragmentation of the editorial approach, at least for my taste. Still, David Hill let me have my head with Media Watch and protected my back. Today, the ABC is headed by one Jonathan Shire, a man who played fast and loose with his CV in applying for the job, and appears now to be playing slow and tight with an institution that, for all its faults, this country cannot do without. Or is he trying to prove to us that it can? I doubt that John Howard would be unhappy were that to be the result, and were the ABC to degrade into unlamented irrelevance. I said earlier that under Shire the product stinks. You don't have to take my word for that. You can see and hear for yourself. Perhaps the greatest failing in today's ABC is its standards. While the ABC, given its place in the culture, ought to be and used to be the exemplar of Australian broadcasting standards, it can make no such claim today. Most of its journalists appear to be auditioning for Channel 9. Indeed, the threats to journalistic standards from Shire and others who appear to have no grasp of the idea of fearlessness, no grasp and certainly no embrace, are quite alarming. I read in recent weeks that, in the context of fierce criticism from the Liberal Party's federal director, the ABC is considering a new editorial policy that would require, quote, all relevant viewpoints to be presented within news bulletins and programs, close quote. I suppose that means if a child molester is convicted and sentenced, he's entitled to time on the 7:30 report to proselytise in favour of his conduct being seen as admirable. When politicians are caught with their hands in the till, as they so frequently are, I suppose their wives will be able to come on ABC News and say what good fathers they are. Stuff like that. I can think of no interference with the practice of journalism that betrays a more fundamental misconception of the function of informing the community than that new editorial policy. No longer will news be defined as something someone doesn't want you to know. It'll be something that happened 10 days ago, or maybe it didn't. Who knows? Perhaps it isn't important that Mr. Shire was economical with the detail about his pre-ABC employment history. Perhaps it isn't important that his period in charge has been marked by management crises and crisis management. Perhaps it isn't significant that Mr. Shire has so unquestioningly and so wrongly bought the ABC haters line that there is a lack of balance in ABC journalism, and that can only be redressed by giving a slot to the barking mad right. Perhaps it isn't important that Mr. Shire hasn't demonstrated any kind of loyalty to the idea of the ABC. Perhaps it isn't significant that Shire was in charge when the federal police were called in, allegedly by some bean-counting flack, to interrogate the staff in a doomed attempt to trace the source of a leak about his blowing $7.4 million on hiring extra managers. Perhaps it doesn't matter that he's now hired a media minder whose title is Director of Corporate Affairs, who, it's been suggested to me, is paid a salary of $250,000, much more than twice the money paid to any person of whom I am aware who merely makes programs. Still, whatever she's paid, Mr. Shire's minder is doing her job. His name has disappeared from the headlines. He has been paid his performance bonus, and Donald MacDonald has been installed for another term as chairman of the board, a board stacked by Howard with Krogerite thinkers. The ABC's average rating share, which was 16 at the time of Shire's appointment, has not achieved his objective of 20, but is down to about 12. In Adelaide, I think about 10. That'll teach him to make ratings his objective. Meanwhile, the Australian culture has just about lost the ABC as one of its cornerstones, some would say its keystone. Quite plainly, no one in management is watching the product. They couldn't be. Perhaps I'm not alone in thinking it curious that earlier this year, when the ABC handed me its network once a week to say whatever I wanted to say about anything I chose, that, of course, was not what they had in mind, but they should have read the fine print, shouldn't they? The chief executive never once made contact with me. I've never met the man. It since emerges that Mr. Shire didn't want the program in the first place and vetoed its second season. No doubt the fact that the Prime Minister complained to Mr. Shire because I made an adverse comment about his, the Prime Minister's, having exploited his children in the drug debate would have added more power to Shire's elbow. But there was a time when such a complaint would have been worn by the ABC as a badge of honour. Now it's more likely to be seen as a threat to its budget allocation. May I illustrate the decline of the ABC in community significance with a recent and telling example. the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon are an instance of events of national importance, where Australian media consumers traditionally turned first to the ABC for their information. That tradition is over. The ABC's coverage, which was essentially the same as that of all the other networks, ran a poor third behind 9 and 7 in the ratings. When the ABC loses its credibility, I am entitled to assert that the product stinks, and I am entitled to blame the man in charge. For quite a long time, I've fantasized about running the ABC. Well, on the face of it, I have some relevant qualifications. I have actually made programs, and I have spent more than 20 years as a lawyer practicing in media and administrative law. Regrettably for me, at least, running the show is something I will never have the chance to do. ABC boards appoint their managing directors, and the government of the day appoints the boards and gets the chief executive it wants by stacking. Hence David Hill and Brian Johns. Hence Jonathan Shire. Given that I would be equally unacceptable to both possible governments, that I regard as a badge of honour, I'm in the luxurious position of being able to say how I would run the ABC without any danger that my ideas would ever be put into practice. So let me tell you what I would do. First, I would abandon all enterprises that do not constitute public broadcasting. I would do that by licensing ABC programs to online providers, as I would license ABC enterprises and product merchandising to a retailer. Then I would apply the ABC's budget to broadcasting, a novel thought, and nothing else. Then I would set up various program divisions of the ABC as separate corporations. The holding company would contract with them, the News Corporation, the Documentary Corporation, and so on, for the supply of programs on the basis of budgetary apportionments decided upon by the board. Those program corporations would decide for themselves what goods and services they would acquire, the in-house, insourcing, or whatever, which would result in the unravelling of the hopelessly top-heavy corporate structure and management structure that now soaks up so much of the ABC's money. $7.4 million on managers. Let me give this to you as why I feel that way. Whenever I was involved with Media Watch or the Littlemore program earlier this year, we had a staff of 3. Production people and an executive producer. There was no manager involved at any level. The program was made by us, reported to the head of television, and went to air. So where is the need? If we have no need, we had no need for a manager of any form, why does any other program, but $7.4 million of the budget, went on 3 levels of management? So, hence my philosophy about setting up separate corporations that decide for themselves what level of management they want and where they're going to buy their goods and services, so long as they present the holding company or the board with the product that they have contracted to supply. See, the rationale of that structure is that the ABC's function is making and broadcasting programs, and that the corporate structure must serve that end rather than the reverse, which would appear to be the situation that presently obtains. What would I broadcast? Not what you see and hear now. The ABC has now to see itself in the real world of broadcasting. Today it is required to function in a spectrum that includes pay television and new media. It has to find its niche, and that niche should be quality. News and current affairs, documentaries, music, comedy, arts, and original drama. Some high-quality imports. The ABC has no choice but to abandon sport. It's practically done that anyway. Perhaps some function remains in relation to children's programming, but I would need to be persuaded of that. No cooking programs, no lifestyle programs, no travel shows, no movies. The ABC no longer has to be and can't be all things to all viewers and listeners. While there may have been a time when people could honestly say they only watched the ABC, that simply cannot be true anymore. The ABC has to become the source to which we go for information. And that information has to be of the highest possible quality. No more solecisms and catacreses, No more topping and tailing of American-British packages, passing them off as an Australian perspective. Stop giving about a third of the news bulletin to finance and another third to sport. Forbid Four Corners taking a week off every month to run some bought-in product from Yorkshire Television. Get Roy and HG back and let them do whatever they want. Engage the community. Regain self-respect. My ABC would take risks. Sometimes it would come a cropper. That's inevitable. It would be brave and bold. It would make programs that weren't BBC clones. It would inform, but it would amuse and entertain. It would be an alternative to globalised pap. That's why we have Channel 9 and Channel 7 and Channel 10. Babies like pap. They can suck it in without teeth. But Australia is not made up of intellectual babies. Mr. Shire and his managers may well, these are the people from Walt Disney, may well be afraid of the word intellect, and they believe we all share that fear. One of my harshest criticisms of the Shire ABC is that while it focuses its attention on revenue raising, because the government doesn't want to fund a media organisation that it regards as its enemy, it's taken its eye off the ball entirely. The ABC's game is broadcasting, and nobody is working on the nature of what is unquestionably its sole raison d'etre. Hence, we have national news programs that haven't changed in format for 30 years, and a 7:30 report that is so linear and stodgy that you know in the first 45 seconds there's nothing in it you want to watch. The Four Corners that is self-indulgent and out of touch, never mind the ghetto of foreign correspondent and the format-driven late line. Although all those programs are in urgent need of reconsideration, nobody is thinking about them. They're just there, as they always were. What I fantasise about isn't an ABC for the elite. Nothing like it. After years on TDT and Four Corners, Media Watch, and doing the Little More program earlier this year, I believe I have a first-hand awareness of what the audience for quality television on the ABC is made up from, and it is not university graduates whose incomes are in the top 5% of the community. There are plenty of such people watching and listening, but the ABC appeals, when it does its job, to people across the whole sweep of the community, and all those people have a right and a need to be engaged, enraged, challenged, irritated, and delighted by their own broadcaster. The tragedy is that isn't going to happen. Under its current management, the ABC will slide ever faster down the sheer shire slope to insignificance, mediocrity, and irrelevance. The passion with which Australians have always received their ABC will quietly die, and I can't bear to watch. Those are my submissions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now a question from the media. There's a central speaker over there. Would you please give your name and the organisation represent before you ask your question? Thank you. Come on, rush, someone, rush.
I'm not from the advertiser table, come on. Brad Crouch.
If it's on. Hi, Brad Crouch from the Sunday Mail. I was fascinated to hear about your fantasies. One of my fantasies is Nigella Lawson.
I don't need to know that.
I fantasise about the food she makes. It's delicious. I also watch The Bill. I like Australian Story. I even laugh at the fat. While you've made a compelling case for getting rid of a lot of things that the ABC has at the moment, making it an information channel, and I agree it can't be all things to all people, is there a risk you're going to marginalise it too much by following the path of your fantasy so it might end up like the Weather Channel or an obscure cable channel that is very worthy but has lost further touch with people?
I don't think you listened to what I said. It's, what I want is not going to happen. But I'm not getting the job. The point is, there has to be a debate about this stuff, so somebody has to take a position on it. because nobody in the ABC is talking about it. What you say is quite valid. I mean, there are merits in those individual programs that you talk about, but so long as you are putting a cooking program in prime time and the lifestyle channel on Foxtel has 5 cooking programs, what exactly is the ABC doing for the Australian culture with that half hour, with Nigel Lawson's daughter? It's, to my mind, there are other priorities, and what I'm seeking to do is ratchet up the debate, at least to start it, to have one, about what's going to go on. Of course there would have to be compromises and so on, but somebody has got to say to the ABC, what are you doing that isn't available elsewhere? What are you doing that isn't some mistaken attempt to compete with something that actually is done better? The only reason the ABC has Nigella Lawson is because the Lifestyle Channel doesn't. Not because the ABC has a need for it. It's just available. Now, the bill, if you take that as an example, is actually quite anti-Australian cultural in the sense that this country, and I speak now as a criminal lawyer, this country has had an immense problem with corrupt police. My viewing of the bill, which has been significant over the years, I suppose, would say that what the bill is getting at is a community acceptance of a certain level of corruption that is on the side of the forces of good. Nobody talks about that stuff. Actually, I feel quite threatened by programs like the bill when you compare it with Blue Murder. Why, you know, it's so much easier to buy in for a few thousand dollars an English program which is racist. I make no apology for saying that. You look at how often the villain in the bill is a black person. Way out of proportion to the number of black offenders in the English criminal judicial system. But that goes unremarked. So that's the program you've got, which is a way of not engaging the Australian community about a very live issue, police and judicial system corruption in this country. It's so much easier, you see, to buy it in. It's the Walt Disney attitude. But, you know, you have a point, I agree. But let's talk about it. Nobody is.
Hi, Meredith Booth from The Advertiser. Just interested as your position, if you had, as a Jonathan Shear, of the head of the ABC, how would you have handled the World Trade Center crisis from a news perspective?
Well, I have some problems with all Australian coverage of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacks. One has to face up to the fact that there is no way there can be an Australian angle on that, and there can't be any Australian coverage. It will be taken off the wok, as they say in the trade. That is, it'll just be the satellite link with whatever provider the ABC or anybody else has a contract with. But there are important things to talk about that I haven't seen being spoken about. I watched a lot of cable, and I think it was the BBC coverage. I can't be sure. But they went to Osama bin Laden's biographer and had an absolutely fascinating interview with him about what motivates this man. Why is it politically and personally that he has this great hatred of America? And that's fascinating stuff, but I saw nothing like it. You get down to the same tabloid obsession of, look, they've pulled another live one out. You know, the sort of Threadbow stuff. It's not about that. It's a tragedy, it's a terrible thing, families have been destroyed, people have lost their lives, yes, but it isn't about a train wreck. There's a huge story. I mean, I don't know if any of you got it on the internet, but somebody forwarded to me a piece written by Michael Moore, who does The Whole Truth on SBS, about it. And what he said was, yes, it's tragic, but who trained this guy? Who equipped the people in Afghanistan with terrorist techniques and with the materiel and so on? Until America realises that the rest of the world isn't there to give us pretty running shoes, we're going to have this problem, and it's not ironic at all that America gets revisited. with the techniques that it exported to kill 38,000 people in Nicaragua, etc., etc., etc. Now, I've not seen that. I've not seen that sort of discussion in the ABC's coverage. It's been ambulance chasing. And this isn't about that.
Bruno? Table 19, Bruno, you had a question? Can you come to the microphone?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Could you go to the microphone, please? Thank you. I'm sorry for that. Mr. Littlemore, my name is Bruno Ventura. I happen to be a city councillor of Adelaide. But in particular, I want to talk to you about the fact that when you were on television on Monday night, my little kids of 8 or 9 years old couldn't pronounce your name properly because they all wanted to hear and see what you were about. So we decided in the family to call you Mr. Stewie. And every Monday night, after the current affairs program, you came on and everybody would yell out, Mr. Stewie's on, and we all took part in what you said. Because your wit, your intelligence, your comments were very much welcomed in our family. However, we couldn't understand why you were not part of SBS.
I wanted somebody to watch.
Therefore, having been part of trying to establish SBS in the 70s with Gough Whitlam in power, we established the ethnic radio, and then SBS was to follow, myself personally. What are your comparisons? What do you think of SBS? Thank you.
I think SBS is very successful in what it set out to do. I think there are still... It still has some problems coming to terms with the informational role in respect of Australian news and current affairs. I quite like the Insight program. There isn't anything exactly the same as that anywhere else, and sometimes it gets to some good issues. The news I have a problem with only insofar as a lot of people think that is the news. Its domestic coverage is very poor, largely because it doesn't have enough money, or almost entirely because it doesn't have enough money. I mean, people say, oh, no, SBS News is great. You get so much more about international news. The truth is you get the uncut version of what came in on the satellite. That's all. It is very much a cut-price operation and ought to have more money if it is going to be engaged in Australian news. I think it's a great pity if people watch only SBS News because they do not get any adequate coverage of Australian events. But generally through SBS, I think it's wonderful, it's unique. One is very... I travel a lot. One is very proud of it, that it's some kind of demonstration of this country's openness and inclusiveness. And there isn't anything like it anywhere I've ever been. It's a wonderful achievement. But I think there is still a dilemma. If you're not going to fund it properly, how can it ever really run a proper news coverage? It certainly is not a standalone news operation. I think if you watch it in conjunction, say you watch it at 6:30 or 9 and watch the ABC, you might get close to it. But the ABC's tendency, I mean, really there's very little news on the ABC when you think about it. A ridiculous slot of the news is devoted to finance. Now, people who are really interested in finance and stock markets and the price of gold and the price of a barrel of oil and the price of the Australian dollar, they're not going to get their primary information from the ABC, are they? They're going to get it from the Fin Review or off the Reuters screen or something like that. But to give up a third of the bulletin, which the ABC frequently does, to finance, is the exclusion of genuine domestic news. So I couldn't be confident and say that a combination of the ABC and the SBS is sufficient, certainly not for my informational needs.
Thank you. Any more? If the media is too timid. What about anyone else? Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, we thank you.
Lee Radford, ABC Country Hour. I'm interested to hear a little more about your perspective about the online activities of the ABC. It's very popular within the organisation at the moment, and to a degree I think it's true to say that it's starting to drive the program-making process for both radio and television. Is it something that we can, as an organisation, ignore and concentrate on our traditional pursuits, or is it a tremendous opportunity begging to be taken up? I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
It is not public broadcasting, full stop. That's what I've got against it. The vast majority of the ABC's audience has nothing to do with online information. The real reason that the ABC has been pushed into online adventures is because the management thinks it will eventually turn that into revenue. And that means advertising. And I'm implacably opposed to that. And for that reason alone, I don't want the introduction of a fifth column by means of the internet. But more importantly, if it is appropriate, and maybe I'm a Luddite about that, but if it is appropriate that the ABC should be in that area, I want to see legislation covering it. And I want to see a budget allocation for it. Because so long as you are stripping money out of program making to fund the very expensive setups for online, then the ABC is not performing in accordance with its charter. I'm old-fashioned enough to think that you get your idea of what the ABC must be from the ABC Act. And that only talks about public broadcasting. The net online services are not public broadcasting. They're another service completely. And the only reason the current management wants it is because it thinks it promises revenue. But I've said that perhaps sufficiently. Yes, sir.
Stuart, my name's Colin Rudd. I'm a freelance journalist, many years ABC and overseas, and I agree with a lot you've said. Your fantasy, I give you another thought of your fantasy. There is a shadowy body called the Advisory Committee. They, in fact, have three vacancies. If it became public that a certain person of some standing and experience decided to join it, maybe it'd become less faceless, a thought.
Do you think anybody at the ABC has ever listened to an advisory committee?
Of course not. But you know why? Because nobody had the clout. I've never bloody well heard, working for the ABC for 10 years, who the hell they were. Yes. Why not turn that body into an ogre?
Well, it's one thought, but I don't think it has the muscle, frankly. It's far better to be like me, outside, peeing in. Sorry.
Any more?
I missed a little more. My name is Thompson, and I love watching the Bill. And on the occasions when I don't watch the Bill, I make sure I record it. And I record it both for myself and for my daughter who lives in 200 miles northwest of Broken Hill. You might miss it.
Have you got cable?
No.
You can watch another 3 hours of it there every week. Well,
we're totally unreconstructed at Gilberton. It seems to me that your thesis is that the ABC is failing because they have a general manager who is the creature of the board, and the board is the creature of the government of the day. And the board, from time to time, has had eminent persons like state premiers on the board. What would be your proposition, if that be the situation, what's your proposition as to how the board should be elected or appointed or achieve the dizzy eminence of being the board of the ABC that can protect Australia's great culture?
Well, there is no other way to have a board of an organised statutory corporation like the ABC than by government appointment. I accept that. The problem is, of course, that the term of board members was designed to fit within a parliamentary session. so that the incoming government would be able to flush out the other government's appointments and stack it with its own. Now, I think you can get round that problem, obviously, by changing the term of members so that there wasn't such a blatant invitation to stack the board implicit in the way you structured it. And I'm not sure that I agree that the board ought to select the chief executive. I'm not sure about that. Perhaps they should. Perhaps it ought to be by some independent process. But one would honestly have to say that since Duckmanton, there have been such profound problems with chief executives of the ABC, and I commend to you a book called Is There a Moderate on the Roof, written by Tom Malombe, about the Hill years and the Ken Meyer years. And one can even go further back than that to the appointment of somebody, the eminently forgotten Geoffrey Whitehead, who was the chief executive before them. Really, it's very sensitive so far as government policy goes. And successive governments, including Labour governments, have seen the ABC as their enemy and have been determined. I look at Kroger's presence on the ABC board. Is anybody so naive as to not be able to infer the purpose for which Kroger was put on the board? Are there heads to be kicked? You get a head kicker. It's not as if Mr. Kroger has any great reputation for concern for the cultural environment. Perhaps I'm doing him an injustice, but I doubt that. The politicisation of the board, the statutory politicisation of the board, is something that has got to be remedied, in my view. Well, I don't know exactly how, but one way is to make the period of appointment such that it doesn't relate to the period of a government's incumbency. That's one way. But it may well be that there ought to be some expertise on those boards too. I'm sure Mr. Bannon is a very nice man. I met him a couple of times. I'm sure he's a nice man. But I'm not sure that you want a board of the ABC that has no knowledge whatever of the business of the ABC, but just knowledge of the preferences of the government of the day. Well, what we're talking about is ideal worlds, because this is me as the boss of the ABC.
Karen Phillips, Hammer Management. Australian sport is shown on television at the elite levels, at the highest professional levels. Where does other Australian sport, in particular women's sport, go if it doesn't go to the ABC?
Well, but the ABC itself wasn't keen on women's sport. I remember in Media Watch days devoting a whole program to the issue of women's sport, and I remember we had on the head of ABC Sport to explain why they wouldn't show women's sport at the elite level. I think in the end that ended in them showing the netball and women's basketball. But the problem with that is, as he explained to us, the ABC would say people don't want to watch it. Now, everybody in every sport reckons they don't get enough television. I'm not sure, frankly, that there is any right for particular sports to be on television. After all, sport isn't on television for the benefit of the sport. It's there for the benefit of the viewers. I mean, I race historic motor cars. I've never seen that sport on ABC television. It's not important. Sport isn't it for itself. And the real truth about television sport is it is attractive to commercial broadcasters because it delivers a very significant audience at a minuscule cost. That's why Murdoch really destroyed rugby league. That's why Murdoch took options on rugby union. That's why cricket is a big success. He just put 5 cameras out at the ground and people will watch for hours and hours and hours. It costs you almost nothing to do compared with having to originate drama or news or current affairs or something else. There is so much sport on commercial television and pay television, and so little available to the ABC in terms of what people want to see. I mean, women's sport, the basketball and netball are there all the time, aren't they? Every time I turn on, it's women's basketball or women's netball. because that's all the ABC can afford. But, well, it is. That's all. The ABC can't pay the rights for the rugby, which they had for 30 years. The ABC can't pay the rights for the rugby league, which they had for 20 years. I don't know. Sport doesn't seem to me to be the problem. It's just a cheap form of television. That's the only reason it's on television at all, is that it's cheap and delivers an audience. Maybe it's just my own preferences or lack of preference, but I don't think sport is important in terms of what the ABC ought to be doing when you've got two Foxtel sport channels, Channel 9 and Channel 7, all delivering sport more than anything else. But I'm a curmudgeon.
Mr. Little, Robert Mayne is my name.
Little Moore's mine.
Yes. Quite so. Lest I be considered a sexist, I should say that this view came from my wife, who's sitting over there at table 19. She thinks that Nigella Bite should be renamed Nigella's Tits. Let me make a point, perhaps, if I may, about... there's a good piece, a hymn, in this week's bulletin by Martin Amis, the novelist, who makes a couple of good points, I think, about what happened in New York and Washington. One is that what America should be doing is not sending cruise missiles into Afghanistan, but parcels of food. And that's an issue I haven't seen explored on the ABC. And the other is that I don't think that he thinks that Americans do not appreciate, 235 million Americans do not appreciate how much they are hated in the Muslim world. I'd appreciate your comments on that. My question, though, goes back to the ABC, and that is, you've said what you'd do for the ABC, and it's not going to happen, but what is going to happen to the ABC? Can I hear you... I'd like to ask you if you would say what you really think will happen to the ABC now.
I think what will happen to the ABC now is what's already happening, and that it will slide into irrelevance. The money is not going into programs. We've got Changi coming up soon, and there's one other program. I have no idea what Changi will be like, but John Doyle wrote it, and I'm a great admirer of his. But why is John Clark let go after the games and so on? You'd think that John Clark would be a person the ABC couldn't do without. There's no effort to retain people like that. I think what we will get is more of this cheap English stuff that Mr. Shire seems to have some particular contact with or expertise in, given his immediate past experience. It's all second rate. I don't know if anybody saw Lock, Stock. Now, the original movie was all right, if you like super violent things like that. And I'm sorry I'm going to offend some people now, but I was pretty surprised to turn on Lock, Stock to watch it. And to hear at 9:30 on the ABC somebody describing somebody else as a fucking cunt. I just thought perhaps Mr. Shire wasn't aware of what he'd bought, or not aware of the culture, not aware of sensitivities. It's just the most extraordinary thing that, as I say, I don't think anybody is watching the product. I think they're watching their budget, and they're watching their opportunities for advertising revenue, and they're watching the online services. Tony Morfitt, who wrote Dynasty and a lot of other things and was a great Australian contributor to the culture as a writer, was hauled up before the ABC's chief executive on some occasion about something he had written, a program he had written. And this bloke was talking about the chief executive, how offensive it was and how wrong it was. And Morfitt said, "I don't think you understand. The only reason the ABC is here is to make pictures come out of those boxes there and noises come out of those smaller boxes. That's the only reason we're here." And this chief executive, who'd grown up in a history of the Secretariat and O&M and forward planning, told him he thought that was a very narrow view of the ABC's function. I think the ABC will go on cutting its fixed costs. I think the ABC will go on, under this management, wasting money on media flacks who are paid $250,000 a year. And I think we will get less and less Australian material on the ABC. We'll get more reruns of whatever there was, dragged out of old filing cabinets, 1915 being a notable example of that. I think the news will be starved of the sort of money it wants. It always surprises me to watch ABC News and see how badly they actually perform their task of expressing themselves, writing the copy and delivering it. Many years ago, I came back to Australia from living in Europe on a ship with a Frenchman and his family who were also coming as migrants. And he said to me, "I notice you speak differently from the way certain other Australians on the ship speak." And I said, "Oh yes, people all do." And he said, "Well, what's the right way to speak English in Australia?" And I said, "Well, I think I can do no better than recommend you watch and listen to the ABC, because that's standard Australian speech. And that's perhaps the best guide." You can't say that anymore. The words ceremony and H and difficulty and testimony are to be heard out of ABC reporters' mouths every night on the news. I am sure nobody is watching. I am sure nobody is listening. It's not just in standards of how they broadcast that the ABC ought to be an exemplar, but it has a cultural function of that kind too, which, as far as I can see, has been abandoned through neglect. Yes, sorry.
Mr. Littlemore, Colin James from the Advertiser. I was already standing in trepidation before getting up, but I speak with a New Zealand accent, so I'm even more nervous now. Away from the ABC, you were with Media Watch for the best part of a decade. I'm quite interested in your observations about the South Australian media. After delivering a sledging that Shane Warne would be totally proud of, I'm just wondering how many complaints your program used to receive from South Australia. We work in a bit of a hothouse here where people feel quite a proprietorial interest in the media outlets, particularly the one newspaper which operates here on a daily basis. I just want to know what you actually think about the South Australian media and how it rates on a national basis. Thank you.
Do you mean... do you mean complaints about what I said about South Australian media, or just complaints about South Australian media? Well, you know, when Vivian Lee got off the plane at Sydney Airport, a reporter called Stuart Carmichael rushed up to her and said, "What do you think of Australia?" And she said, "I don't know, you're standing in the way." I'm not going to pontificate about the South Australian media, which I have not looked at since January at all. I read the Tizer this morning, and I'm not going to say anything more.
Yeah, sure.
It took me 30 seconds.
Stuart, my name's Stuart Forster. I've lived in Australia for 20 years and enjoyed it tremendously. Like you, I share concern for the way that the ABC is going. When I first came to Australia, one of the things that really impressed me was the ABC, and it's been slowly sliding down ever since. And plenty of the people that I associate with say, "Thank God for the ABC," but fewer now than did before. My question to you, not associated as I am with the ABC or with any sort of communications type industry, is what can the average person in the street do to arrest this slide?
Well, the short answer is I don't know, but...
I'm not too pleased with that answer.
I mean, well, well, I suppose a write-in campaign to have me appointed would have as much chance as a snowball in hell. I don't know the answer to that. I even earlier this year, when I did the program for 12 or 13 weeks, I did one program just about the ABC and what I thought was wrong in particular aspects of that. That had no effect at all. You know, I suppose as much effect as Media Watch ever had on a Murdoch newspaper. It's quite extraordinary. I really don't know what the remedy is, because we are not going to get anybody... I mean, my answer to the ABC would really be the government doesn't give enough money to it, so it ought to have the courage to say to the government, "You don't give us enough money to broadcast the way you expect, so we'll broadcast 4 hours a day." Yeah. I would shame the government if I were running the ABC, into funding it properly. And I'd say, you've only given us enough money for us to discharge our responsibilities under the Charter for a finite period every day. I mean, it needs something radical done like that, but you're not going to get it from this management. Sorry? Well, no, I don't think that remedies the problem of the ABC. If people turn off, they don't go back or whatever. No, there has to be agitation. But if it's not coming fundamentally from within the ABC, we're in a lot of trouble. I mean, I think it's tragic. When I said I was an Argonaut, those of you perhaps 50 and above will know what I'm talking about. Yes, and somebody sent me a dragon's tooth. But just for those who don't know, the Argonauts was a radio program for children in the late 40s and 50s. And children throughout Australia, there was no thought of class or location or anything like that. All the kids at my public school were Argonauts, and we all had a number and a name, and we sent in essays and drawings and paintings, and we went home from school and listened to it, and that developed this love for the idea of the ABC that I was talking about at the very beginning, which I think Mr. Shire doesn't have and doesn't understand. This thing that it is our ABC, we used to, it's a terrible word, interact with it. It's like kids, you would know it from your youth, it's like Blue Peter on English television, where the kids would feel that they actually had some part to play and that it was for them. Well, we grew up with that, and so we have a very proprietorial attitude to the ABC. It's not just a channel you can turn on when you want something. It's ours, our service, and we think it has a responsibility to us. But I don't think this management understands that. This has got to be the last, Mr.
Just
Chairman.
This is the last one, yes.
Frederick Tobin. Stuart, two things. One is, what's your reminiscences of Sir James Darling's time at the ABC? And secondly, don't you think that the whole culture is currently afflicted by this so-called political correctness, that people are simply not adventurous enough to branch out as you did? For example, when you were put off, they started a law report. Could you comment on that?
Well, you know, political correctness is such a pejorative term now, but I always thought it meant tolerance and not being racist and not being discriminatory. But the forces of the right have very successfully turned a sort of community concern into a pejorative, and that's a shame. The last thing, working backwards, was about Sir James Darling. He, of course, was not the chief executive of the ABC. He was a former headmaster of Geelong Grammar and was the chairman, as I recall it. And my one contact with him was speaking to him once. I met him once at some... At least he did go and meet the workers, something Mr. Shire doesn't do, at least in my case. And we met Sir James, and I said something to him. I'd been sacked at the time, and I think I'd got reinstated or got back. I was sacked a number of times, but I got back, and I was talking to him about the insecurity of being a journalist at the ABC and how deplorable I thought that was. And he, in his very breezy way, with all those years at Geelong Grammar behind him, told me that he thought that was the nature of journalism and I should get over it. So that's what I think about Sir James Darling. But thank you all for your questions, and thank you for coming.
Don't go yet, Stuart. I don't mind if we go, I'll keep this. Well, you've certainly got my vote, if it's the vote to be a chairman or managing director, whatever you like at the ABC. In the meantime, to help you on the way, here's a bottle of Magnum of Orlando St. Hugo, 1993. It's absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is actually the reason I came.
Okay, before you all start talking about what Stuart's had to talk about, let's draw the raffle, so get your tickets out, please. And I'd like to call up Peter Harron's here from Sunday Mail. Give Peter a welcome. Come up and draw the raffle. I hope they're stirred up well, Peter. Give them a shake. Come up here. Come up here. You read what this man has to say all the time in the paper. Okay, draw one out for us. How you doing?
Going well.
Your microphone, come on.
Bill Nevitt, Sunday Mail.
Is Bill here? Where's Bill? Come on, Bill. You've got the Telstra Panasonic cordless telephone, which is great, right there. Peter, you haven't finished yet. Come on, you've got a few more. Okay, Walter Rogers, come on up here, please. Walter? Walter's got his $50 voucher from the Rock Lobster Cafe in Googer Street. Some great seafood if you haven't been there for a while. Oh, Eva's here. Eva. Okay, who we got?
Orange ticket, F67. F67, orange.
Oh, somebody's coming. And for another $50 voucher from Rigoni's in Lee Street, if you haven't been there for a while, get along to Rigoni's for its legendary fine Italian food. And we have?
Purple, J Pedler, F34.
Well, there we go, up the back. Thank you, Eva. Now, Judith, we've got down here an envelope, a family pass of four tickets to the movie special on Tuesday night.
Movies.
Which is America's Sweethearts Julia Roberts, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Billy Crystal and John Cusack.
And that's blue F71.
Who's got it? Blue. Okay, this one here. Have we got the right ticket? Blue F71. Problem? We've got two F71s, have we? Have we? Don't worry, we'll get you some too. It's not a problem. Just get the name for me, Judith, would you? A little glitch, goodness. Rightio. Now, one more. This is a little plug for the Variety Club. I can't help myself. This is the Australia's Celebrity Chef's Calendar that's selling at Angus and Robinson for $24.99. It's fabulous. They've all been body painted, Australia's top media chefs. And who's going to win it?
F68, Lene Jesse. F68.
Lenine Jesse. Oh, an appropriate person to win it. This lady makes the most fantastic shower caps you've ever seen in your life. And one more.
One more.
A carton of Hahn Premium Light from SA Brewing.
Blue F18.
Blue F18. Who's got it for the carton of Hahn Premium Light?
Down there.
We're right? Over there. There we go. Peter, thank you very much. Please thank Peter Harron from Sunday Mail. And just one final remark in closing. Would you put this date in your diary? Friday the 19th of October at the Novotel on Hindley. Controversial historian Professor Geoffrey Blaney is our guest speaker. Thank you for your attendance today. Thank you very much.